session number 18830, Reel 2.
So Yavorzhin, Reel 2, you were just telling me that you were told that the Russians had intervened. What happened next, please?
Well, we had the, what is called, agonizing discussions with local people, trying to decide what to do with ourselves. It was quite clear that there was no way back, particularly as we realized that the German army was coming through the mountains also, so that we had no way back in that direction. The Russians, we were afraid of. That's all we knew, that we rather not get anywhere near the Russian army. So the only way out was to go across the mountains to Hungary. I'm sure at that point where we were, Hungary was the country next down south. So one morning, very soon after that, because time was getting short and apparently the Russians were getting closer, we just packed up the rest of our belongings and started climbing up on little lanes up the mountains. We soon were joined by many party, primarily men, soldiers, who were also escaping from Poland. There were some units among them, but mostly they were individual soldiers. And among the recollections, there are all kinds of things happened, but among the recollections I have is that they were throwing out a lot of equipment, the army equipment, and we were trying to pick up whatever we could. We picked up, for example, clothes, army clothes, army coats, which were warm and good to have. But also we picked up rifles, grenades, as 15-year-olds would do, and carried all this in the heat and climbing up the mountains fully armed with rifles and lots of ammunition and hand grenades and bayonets and everything else. And after a few hours, we ourselves had to start dropping most of it, unable to carry it all. We had at one point thought that we should try and stay with some people and organize some kind of a defense there, stay with groups that were contemplating defending these lanes against the enemy, whoever it may be. I can recall some talk. Because we joined, by then we joined older, but still young people, groups of young people who similar background to ours, that were in secondary schools, that were part of the army cadets units at the school. But all this was given up and we just continued, I think for 2 days, going up until we reached the Hungarian border. There everybody was told to drop everything, or armament and equipment, rifles, everything.
Who told you that?
There was a Polish senior officer there. There were Hungarian soldiers, or maybe just border guard, and he was with them, and he stopped the whole. By then, there were large crowds of. We were marching with people in front of us and behind us, not marching formally, but just walking as far as you could see ahead and behind. There were people walking, army. And from time to time, he stopped whole groups and everybody to lay down their arms. Terribly emotional scenes, of course, because people realized this was it. This was leaving Poland. This was dropping anything that one had to fight the enemy with. And then, but nevertheless, everybody, they didn't check us. So lots of people carried maybe guns, handguns and so on, hand grenades and things like that. Nobody was checking whether it was done. But obviously rifles and large machine guns and so on were all left behind. And we then continued marching. I think we marched for about 3 days, really, without stop, day and night. March, shuffled at times, because a vast number of people were going through these mountain lanes. I can't recall much except the mountains, the forests, no food. I think we picked up, bought a piece of ham or something with no bread or anything, just we bought it somewhere and ate that with a drink of water.
So shuffling because there were
so many people, so many thousands walking slowly into Hungary. One night I could recall a scene of we were stopped suddenly and were told that there was a spy caught somewhere ahead of us. And there was a shot and we started marching again. And he was lying because we sort of kicked the body as we were walking. Somebody was shot as a spy. And this continued. We marched until we reached the first railway lines, Hungarian railway lines. And that started the second part. This is where they told us to get on the trains, and we were taken away into Hungary to be placed in camps, not prisoner camps, they were internment camps was the word.
What were conditions like in these camps?
The conditions were mostly extremely bad. I read some of the stories by some of the Poles, and I just cannot recognize them. Maybe we were unlucky because some of the camps had very, very difficult conditions. One camp that I can recall was on the Danube. It was a camp of summer camp for Hungarian soldiers, sappers. They were really practicing the various boat trainings and so on. Well, these barracks stood a few feet above the ground because it all flooded. It was a flood area of the Danube. Everything was wet. We just slept on straw. There was no recognition. We were 15, 16, 17, but we, of course, were treated like any other soldiers. There was no special treatment of any kind. We all had lice soon because there was nothing really to change into. Food was absolutely minimal. And then started unrests, and where the Hungarians got very, very tough with us. They brought in armed soldiers. And
is this because you were complaining?
Partly, I think we happened to fall into a camp which was accused to hold communist agitators, was the word. That was, of course, Hungary was under Nazi influence. It would finish up with the Germans.
What was the name of this camp?
I'd have to look for it. I can't recall. Once again, my brother.
Is it somewhere near Budapest?
All I can, Magyarovar was later I think.
Anyway, don't worry.
No, I'm afraid.
What happened when the Hungarian troops...
Well, at one stage, I recall there were riots, and the Poles just would not take, but whether it was the conditions in the camp, the bad conditions, or the way we were treated, or whatever it was, they rioted, and of course the Hungarians would have none of it. They surrounded the camp with soldiers, bayoneted soldiers with machine guns, stood on these higher points, pointing at us. And anybody who tried to move out, they were beaten with rifles and so on.
Did you take part in these riots?
I didn't take part. We were all out in milling around. I think some people were shouting. I can't really recall. I can recall shouting, shuffling, moving, seeing the army, Hungarian army around. From their faces you could see this was no joke. This was serious for them. We were rebellions and communists, and they were ready to shoot us if we showed some defense. Of course, they must have been aware that there was equipment, military equipment around the people still, those who carried it, you know, from the border.
Was there any shooting?
I don't know. Might have been some shooting. I think there were people badly beaten by the soldiers, some people. Always the front line of, as you see it, you know, those who protest the loudest get some rough treatment.
Were there communists in the internment camp?
I know. I doubt it. What was people after already months have passed, and people were going crazy because they left their families. We knew nothing what was happening in Germany, in Poland, occupied Poland. And what was happening also, there was agitation by the Germans, actually, for people to demand to return to Poland. What have you got to be afraid of? Look what conditions you've got here, type of approach. We certainly had a Gestapo man arrived and was the sort of second in command of the camp commander. There was a civilian in proverbial letters with them, and they were encouraging people to think about returning. And what started happening was that groups of people started disappearing during the night. The next day, when there was a roll call, there would be 50 people fewer or something. And that upset the Hungarians a lot, these disappearances. And they were very strict with us.
Where had the disappeared gone to?
To Poland. They were persuaded to return, that free return home and sort of a pass to get back home. Of course, that wasn't so. Nobody returned home free.
Were you personally registered with the Hungarian authorities?
Most likely. I can't recall. Yeah, they were taking details of everybody was registered. Yes, I'm sure I was, yes.
What do you remember next?
After that, for whatever reason, young people were taken out. The sort of school age youngsters were taken out of the camp and sent to another camp. An old factory. Hungary was full of abandoned big industrial concerns of the First War. Hungary, after all, was way back a part of Empire, Austro-Hungarian Empire. So the country had been prosperous, and much more prosperous in the olden days. So there were a big sort of complexes, abandoned complexes, industrial complexes of factories, and they pushed us into one of these. It was midwinter, and that was probably living-wise the worst conditions that I have ever experienced. We were put into little rooms. There was no heat. There never has been any heat in the whole place. And so that in the morning, of course, everything was frozen. Water was just ice. And I think we did some rioting there, we, the young ones.
What form did that take?
Shouting nasty things at the Hungarian soldiers, throwing bricks at them from various places on the walls. They would, if they caught anybody doing it, they would get a good rifle butt of a rifle in the head.
Did that happen to you?
No, I don't think so anyway. We ran around and did shout, and they fired shots, but whether they fired at us or just to frighten us, I don't know. Because there was a vast factory and we got to know it quite well. It was, I think, that we were extremely cold and not exactly well nourished. And I recall a group of, we would be taken to have a shower every so often. And to get into the shower, we had to go through an area that was heated, and they had these old-fashioned army little stoves, yeah. And our people were so skilled by then that while walking through it, they stole the stove that was actually had fire in it, including the pipe, and carried it. This big group somehow managed to talk to the soldiers and carried the whole thing away into our sleeping quarters. And we set it up and started heating, but of course, the soldiers realized something is missing in here. And that I can recall. And they're coming very, very annoyed, finding after a time that who had it. But at least we managed to warm up the room a bit. So, and that went on again for some time until, I suppose, this 1939-40 winter was one of the most severe, as the records show. Extreme amounts of snow and very cold. And we removed then again, those who were attending school were taken out. The Poles have managed to organize a Polish school on Balaton Lake. And those who admitted they were students wanted to admit, because some didn't want to go.
Did you go?
Yes.
To Lake Balaton?
Yes, I did. Yes.
What was the name of the place?
No idea. Balaton. I don't know where it was.
Balaton Felt.
The only reason I know it because Balaton Lake, but I cannot for the life of me, I can't recall the place, the name, anything. So I'm afraid I can't.
But you attended lessons there?
Yes, we did for a bit. There were all kinds of. Learned a bit more about what was happening in the world. And that's where we learned that it was possible to escape further on to France, that Poles were organizing a government and army in France at school.
How did you do it?
I added 2 years to my age so that I was close to the military, 17 and a half, if I recall, was the age. So we were, in a way, considered as military people, but for the purpose of escape, we lied that we were only 16, and that allowed us, some of us, to travel under the military age, because the military age people had difficulty. In fact, they were not allowed to travel across borders. They had to march, escape through the borders, and be taken across rivers and so on. They had to get out of trains way before that and walk, and then be taken by guides across the border. Anybody of military age that could be easily recognized. Those who couldn't would lie about their age, say they were younger, or a few could tell they were older. And we could travel, mostly we traveled. I recall we traveled on trains, international trains of some kind, through Yugoslavia into Italy. And I recall being taken off the trains by our people at some stages, walking for whatever reason. Maybe there were too many Poles on the trains and there were some controls. And I cannot recall how long it took, anything very much about it, except that we finally reached France.
Did you go through Yugoslavia and Italy?
Yeah, yes. Yes, we had to, yeah. In a variety of ways, mainly by train, although some walking was also involved.
Did you have any trouble with any authorities?
In many ways, we were in groups, and we were instructed, the likes of me, the sort of youngsters, we weren't expected to say a word. There was a corporal or somebody who spoke the language would talk on our behalf. We had good treatment, particularly by the Italians. They were very sympathetic to Poles. And seeing us very young people, they were extremely helpful. So we were okay there. But I detail where and what, very difficult. I cannot, you sit in a train in winter, you can't see anything because the snow is blocked off. Nobody else blocked anything, because Italy, of course, was not, I don't think it was involved in. No, because they allowed the trains to go through to some extent from Yugoslavia in a military way. So you couldn't, I can't even recall which places we stopped. We could hear the Italians saying that place, but I wouldn't see anything.
What happened to you in France?
Well, we finished up in Modane, on the border town. We were taken off the border town, taken off by the French garrison. There was the high mountain region, Chasseur, I forget.
Chasseur
Alpin, yeah. And they located us in their barracks, gave us food, because by then Poles have come to an agreement to form an army, military, and so they looked after us, fed us, gave us uniforms of whatever kind they could at that time, and started putting us into military units and marched around and so on.
This is on the Italian border?
Yes, but we're in France now. Yeah.
At Monton?
Modane, I think, was the name of the border city.
So, can you tell me more about what happened to you in France?
There's blank between Modane. The next place is Lyon, Bron, which was the aerodrome or Air Force, French Air Force base in Lyon. We got French uniforms, military Air Force uniforms, and we're a part of the really French Air Force, although Polish units were in some way formed out of this. Various Polish Air Force people who were regulars who had fought or were trained in Poland by then would be incorporated into various fighting French units. And Poles did fight Polish fighters. We
had you wanted to be in the Air Force?
Oh yes, always. Right before the war, when I was that little, I always wanted to fly. That was the only place that I wanted to be. And this was an opportunity. And this is where I parted from my brother. Or maybe even in Modane, I'm sorry, probably in Modane. In some place where there was a separation and Polish authorities started registering people and asking where they wanted to, which units they wanted to be. My brother went to the army or communication, I think, or whatever it was called. Whereas I said, I want to go to the Air Force. Remembering that I said I was 2 years older than I really was. I was just about the age when I was acceptable.
So what kind of training did you get in France?
I was officially classified as élève pilot, which means we were to wait for training as pilots. I calculated that after a time, watching the pace at which the French were training, as that would take 14 years of waiting before we would get to be trained as pilots. That was very, very slow. So meanwhile, we were cleaning places, helping to look after officers' messes and things like that, carrying various things.